Welcome back to Living Lab. I'm Heather Goldstone. One of the first science policy ideas put out by the Trump transition team back in November was a proposal to move all Earth science out from under the umbrella of NASA and perhaps give it to another agency, like the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. That transfer hasn't come to pass, at least not yet, and Earth science is still carrying on. In fact, right now, scientists from Harvard University, the National Center for Atmospheric Research, and yes, both NASA and NOAA are flying around the world trying to get a better handle on what's going on in our atmosphere at a chemical level. My colleague Craig LaMolt from WGBH News joined them for a leg of the journey, and he joins us now from a studio in Boston. Craig, it's great to have you on the show.
Thanks so much.
Now, flying around the world sounds like fun, but this is not just a joyride, of course. What's the goal of this mission?
Right. The mission, it's called the Atmospheric Tomography Mission. The acronym is actually spelled ATOM, but they don't call it ATOM. They call it ATOM because it's not actually an atomic study, so they don't want to confuse things. So they call it ATOM. And the point is they want to better understand the chemistry of the atmosphere. They want to know basically how pollution moves around the globe, how different gases and molecules are interacting with each other in the atmosphere at different altitudes. And they have all these computer models that show that pollution moves around, but those models really, they don't give much of an indication of how much of each gas or each particle or whatever is in each place. So that's why they're flying to these places in this plane. Here's Harvard researcher Roisin Khuman.
We take in samples from the outside of the airplane, and we can see how much CO2, methane, CO there is at that second. So as we're flying up and down through the atmosphere, we get a very good picture of both the composition, as in how much of any given gas there is at different levels of the atmosphere, which most models haven't been able to, they haven't had the data to be able to test any of their hypotheses on that.
So they're trying to back up those models with all this data, or maybe actually disprove the models if necessary. They think it's really important to understand what pollution is coming from local sources and what's spreading from other places in the world.
Would you say that this is climate science? I mean, that's one of the first places most of our minds go at this point when we hear about different gases that are in the atmosphere. We start thinking about greenhouse gases and climate change. But this sounds like maybe it's more than just climate science.
Yeah, it is more than, I mean, that's definitely part of it. You know, as Khuman said, they're looking at CO2 and methane and all these greenhouse gases. They're also measuring these black carbon particles, which float around in the atmosphere. And because they're dark, they absorb heat and they warm things up. And they can actually also coat snow and glaciers and things like that and speed up melting of those things. But they are looking at other forms of pollution as well. And it's really, again, it's just about understanding all of the different things that are going in the atmosphere, all the different chemicals that are interacting with one another.
Now, the airplane that you're in, I mean, this is basically like a flying lab with a whole bunch of equipment crammed into this airplane. What's it actually like in there?
It's incredible. I mean, really, it's like taking a lot of different labs and just smushing them together in this compact plane. I mean, it's a big plane. It's a DC-8 plane, but it's just full of all of this equipment. On the outside, there are these sensors that are sucking air in as the plane flies along, and it's picking up all of these measurements. Inside, there's, you know, all of this expensive lab equipment like mass spectrometers and things like that are crammed in there. And it's just full of scientists who are flying all over the globe, getting to some of the most remote places, getting these measurements. This was the second of four trips around the world that this plane is taking. The first one was in August, and they're hitting actually all four seasons. So they have two more to go. They're going to do one in the spring and one in the fall.
And each of those laps around the globe takes a full month. I mean, that's a lot of time on that plane, essentially, in that lab. What's it like for the researchers?
Yeah, it's pretty intense for them. I mean, they're working the whole time. It's like, this is not a joy trip. They're going to all these places, but they are working hard. A lot of them, you know, scientists staring at laptops the whole flight, just taking all these measurements and watching how they change over time in different altitudes. Some are constantly taking air samples that they're going to bring back to labs for testing later. And it's really exhausting. Like, last time, they apparently slept in 12 time zones in 11 countries. So that happened because they, in one of the countries they were in, they were there the night the daylight savings change happened. So, like, they said it's impossible to know, like, what time they are, where they're in. It's just sort of this exhausting thing. In fact, actually, the Harvard principal investigator, Steve Woofsy, told me that after the trip last August, he had vertigo for a month.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Now, this isn't the first time that NASA or NOAA has used planes kind of like this to monitor the atmosphere, but what makes this mission new or special?
Yeah, what they said was, you know, usually they know sort of where pollution is, and then they go there to measure it, right? It's a very specific, like, let's go and find out what's in this one place. The point here is not that. It's to get a more general view of the atmosphere as it is all over the globe, especially in these remote places. So they're measuring, you know, polluted places as well, but they want to know what's going on in some of these pristine places. In fact, I think they're even more interested in understanding how pollution and greenhouse gases and these things are impacting places where the measurements may be much, much smaller. You know, that those impacts could even be more important in places that we think of as being pristine. And they're also making a real point in this mission of getting precise measurements at all different altitudes. So sometimes we were up at 30 or 40,000 feet, and other times we were 500 feet over the ocean for like 10 minutes or so.
I don't get seasick easily, but that sounds like that could do it. I mean, what's it like to do that dipping up and down?
It was not nearly as bad as I thought it was. It was kind of more gradual. I did have a little patch behind my ear that was giving me some stuff to make sure I didn't get too seasick. But, you know, I mean, when you're in a DC-8 and you're looking out the window at the ocean, that's 500 feet below. I mean, 500 feet is a sizable distance, but it does not feel like that. It feels like you are right on top of the ocean at 500 feet.
Well, and the leg you started from Palmdale, California, went up over Alaska, out over the Arctic Ocean. I mean, that must have been just jaw-droppingly beautiful, icy beautiful, I guess, at this time of year, but beautiful.
Well, yeah, especially, you know, over Alaska itself, the mountains were, I mean, just unbelievably gorgeous, as you would expect. At one point, I was in the cockpit as we flew over Denali at sunset. I mean, it was some really amazing stuff. But I see we actually, you know, as you said, flew over Alaska and we got to the Arctic Ocean. And that, I gotta say, was actually pretty scary from a climate perspective, because as we were looking out the window, you know, we could see what the ocean looked like. And here's a little sound of the project's principal investigator again, Steve Woofsy of Harvard. He came over the headsets. We all had headsets on. And again, Roisin Kaman responding to him.
There's open water all around here.
And the bit that is there looks awfully thin. Most of it's translucent.
Yeah, it's very thin. It's frazzle, basically.
Nobody's gone hunting on this.
I really don't think that's what it's supposed to look like.
Yeah, it really was all broken up. And, you know, while I've never actually seen the Arctic Ocean before, I had to agree with him. It really did not look right. It didn't look like what I expected it to look at all. It
certainly doesn't seem like your mental image of the Arctic in the middle of winter.
No.
Obviously, this mission is still in progress. As you said, two more laps around the globe still to go. But any exciting scientific finds along the way so far?
Well, again, yeah, this is just the first leg of this mission. They're going to be on this flight for more than a month at this point. But, you know, in just the first flight, they were really excited because there was a storm front in the Pacific that had whipped up a lot of pollution from Asia. And along the edge of storms like that, there's an effect called the warm conveyor belt, where the air moves up in the atmosphere and into the troposphere. And we were able to fly through that warm conveyor belt, taking measurements at different altitudes as we went up. And a lot of the scientists on board were thrilled to get those kind of readings, to get that kind of data on the how that process works and how pollution can move from lower in the atmosphere up to the troposphere at higher altitudes.
As much fun as it is to just talk about what they're doing, I have to ask, how are these NASA Earth scientists feeling about the prospects for their research under the Trump administration?
Yeah, that was, of course, something I was really wondering about as this trip got underway, and I asked a lot of people about that. I will say that it's one topic that none of the scientists who work for the federal government were really eager to talk about on the record. It was just something they didn't want to get into. Some of the Harvard people were a little bit more willing to open up about it, and you know, I asked Steve Woofsy, who, again, is the principal investigator of the whole project, and he kind of took the long view.
So funding goes up and down. Priorities of the administration or of NASA go up and down. The problems that we're talking about, the scientific problems and their feedback on society, are here to stay. So this research will continue for a very, very long time. Whether or not it has a short-term zig or zag is not something that's under my control.
doesn't sound exactly like optimism, but not exactly pessimism either.
Yeah, it's some kind of delicate balance that I think scientists are used to striking, maybe.
Craig LaMolt is a reporter with WGBH News. Craig, thanks.
No problem.
And that's our show. Don't forget to send us your thoughts on the March for Science and the Trump administration's science policies. Leave us a message at 508-289-1285. Tweet us or find us on Facebook. We're Living Lab Radio. Until next week, this is Living Lab. I'm Heather Goldstone. Thanks for listening.